Hello and welcome to ADHD Mums. In this podcast, we tackle the tough, often unspoken realities of motherhood, neurodiversity, and mental health. Hello and welcome to ADHD Mums. Today we have a really highly anticipated episode. I have been trying to get a psychiatrist on this podcast for nearly 3 years now, and today we have finally done it. And a big welcome to Dr. Mimi Shu. How are you, Mimi?
I'm well, thanks, Jane. It's great to be invited to attend this podcast. As you know, I'm a child and adolescent psychiatrist. I work primarily in telehealth at the moment. I see kids from basically all over Australia right now. So it's great to join you today and to chat a bit about a topic that we both love to talk about and learn more about, ADHD.
And look, thank you so much for your time, because we talk about on the podcast how difficult it is to get in to see a psychiatrist and how tricky that is. So I know your time's very valuable. We're going to quickly do a brief about what clinic you're in and anything else that you'd like to share before we start.
So I'm working for Lionheart Clinic, which is a telehealth clinic. As I've mentioned, I see kids from all over. Primarily at the moment, it's New South Wales and ACT, but we are looking into expanding into other states at some point as well. I see kids from age 5 to 18. A lot of the time I'm spending time with the young person themselves, as well as with families and with parents as well. So that's part of my process.
Oh, fantastic. And you said you work primarily on telehealth. Are you able to diagnose and treat on telehealth, or do they have to be in person? How does that work?
Yeah, absolutely. So I do diagnose ADHD over telehealth. It often involves getting a lot of background information, whether that's forms being filled out by teachers so that I'm hearing from teachers how the young person is going at school. It usually involves school reports as well, and it's quite an extensive online assessment with the young person and also with parents as well.
A lot of parents talk about how maybe they were expecting to get medication or something, you know, right straight away. And, you know, there can be that journey with medication where it's not always right straight up. Why do you think it's so common that parents are kind of just thinking they're going to get there and it's going to be kind of like a one pill fix, if you don't mind me saying?
I think more recently there's been much more awareness from everybody in society about what ADHD might look like. And so there's been a lot of interest, obviously, with people wanting to get a diagnosis and also not really knowing how the process works in terms of the health system here. I think what makes it difficult is that when people come to see me, they're usually at the point where there's multiple things going on in terms of mental health. Oftentimes when kids initially start that ADHD journey, it might be more seeing a pediatrician first. Usually they're the ones that manage the more clear-cut cases of ADHD, the more simple ones. Often by the time they come to me, it's because there's multiple other things going on with their mental health as well. And so disentangling some of that can be quite tricky. And that also means that assessment process is particularly important. So for some of the young people that I see, it's pretty clear cut that it's just, you know, a straightforward case of ADHD. And for those ones, I'm more likely to move on to the medication quickly. But for other people, there might be other things going on. It could be anxiety, school refusal, depression, a whole series of other things that we potentially need to look at more in detail first, if that makes sense.
Oh, it's a great point that you brought up, actually. A lot of people ask in the Facebook group. We've got a massive Facebook group with over 6,000 members. I do see a lot of similar questions asked. And one of them would be, when should I see a child psychiatrist and when should I see a pediatrician? Is there a best way, or is there a good way to use a psychiatrist and a pediatrician?
Yeah, absolutely. So what I found is that if your child has medical issues, like physical health problems, as well as the ADHD side of things or mental health, then the first point of call is usually the pediatrician, mostly because they're more able to look after the medical and physical side of things. In terms of seeing a child psychiatrist, oftentimes I might get pediatricians referring young people to come and see me because there's multiple mental health issues going on and they've already tried some of the usual first line things and it's not really worked out. And so they're seeking a bit more advice from somebody like me, if that makes sense. It also depends on where you're based in Australia as well. I know that there's really big wait times often for pediatricians and also child psychiatrists, but I do find that this is probably more common to get psychiatry on telehealth as opposed to pediatricians on telehealth. So I've had a few patients where it's really hard to access a pediatrician in rural areas for a straightforward case of ADHD. And so they end up coming to see me instead because it's just more viable logistically for them to be able to see somebody over telehealth.
Are you able to also diagnose autism, or do you generally, or do you not do that? That has to be in person.
Yeah, so I think it depends on the clinician that you're asking. There are some clinicians that will prefer to do that face-to-face, and there are other clinicians who are comfortable with doing that over telehealth. My stats on it is that I know that there are limitations to diagnosing autism by telehealth. So my recommendation is always to go for a face-to-face autism assessment if it's possible to do so. So I tend to not diagnose autism as part of my assessments, but I will point people to who they can access in terms of psychologists who might be able to do an ADOS or ADIR face-to-face to be able to come to that diagnosis or conclusion if I'm concerned about that.
Yeah, I think you made a really great point, actually. My best friend had her child diagnosed ADHD by telehealth, and she said it was basically impossible to even assess autism because her child was so hyperactive. They weren't able to get her to really interact at all. So I think it's a great point. Those in-person assessments can be really important.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's also the difficulty of seeing kids online as well. Often the telehealth model is much more approachable for teenagers where they're much more verbal, or older primary school kids. I often find that it's a bit harder for the younger ones to stay engaged, but oftentimes it needs to be supplemented from information from the parents because they might not necessarily know answers to things that I'm asking, if that makes sense.
So what would be some of the biggest kind of myths that you see parents come in and say to you and you're like, look, that's just not true?
Yeah, so I think one of the common ones I hear include questions like ADHD meds going to turn my kid into a zombie or change their personality. I think that's quite a common fear that parents have when they first find out about their child having a diagnosis. I make it really clear to the parents that that's definitely not the aim. That's not the aim of why we prescribe medications. The aim of why we prescribe medications is to improve their functioning. Usually it's for things, specific settings like the school setting, for example, so that we know that their education isn't being compromised and they're able to do their best in that setting, rather than to change anything about their personality or their likes or interests. I have noticed that in some people, they might respond differently to ADHD medications. And so in most instances, obviously I'm asking feedback from the parents as well, if they're noticing anything that's concerning in terms of side effects and how their child is behaving once we've made changes for medication or if we're starting a medication. So I think that's really key. It really is about that personalized, individualized approach to the type of medication, the dose as well, for that individual body. There's no one size fits all. And it really is about that feedback back and forth.
I love that. That is certainly a big myth that I see in the Facebook group. Another myth that I see in the Facebook group a lot is around, I suppose, a delay. So let's say, for example, you have one parent that really would like to try medication for the child. You have one that doesn't, and they're not together. And I see this often where you have the parent that wants to try medication say the outcomes for that child are going to be better if they try medication, if we can find one that works. And the other parent says no. Then there seems to be a bit of an argument around whether the outcomes for that child would be better if you could find the right ADHD medication. And I was wondering, when you see children into adolescence, do you see a difference in the children that were able to try medication earlier and get that help versus ones that don't?
Yeah, that's a hard question to answer, mainly because I don't think ADHD presents the same way for everybody. So it really depends on a whole range of different things for that individual young person. So for example, you might get somebody who's pretty intelligent, you know, is quite sociable, manages to get by in primary school. But once they hit high school, the attention difficulties become much more pronounced. It's much more difficult for them to overcompensate in other areas to make up for it. And then that's when they're really starting to notice difficulties. So that would be quite different to say somebody who was really struggling with hyperactivity and not being able to sit still in the classroom, right from kindy, for example, and the teachers pick up on that and they're saying to the parents, oh, we really need to intervene right now. Otherwise, education is going to be completely compromised. They're not going to be able to function in that classroom setting. So I think that's what makes that question difficult. Everybody is so different. And even the ways that the symptoms come out for each person as well is also quite different. So it's hard to say what might happen for the people that were only diagnosed later on in life versus earlier, because at the end of the day, the diagnosis is made when there's issues in terms of functioning. So when that comes up, that's often when people might present for a diagnosis or for an assessment.
One thing that I wonder about a lot, I was diagnosed very late at 36, and there's a huge amount of people that, you would see that all the time, that are coming out now later on. And a lot of us, when we come in, we have those complex conditions around, stress, depression, anxiety, burnout. And I always wonder for myself, if I had have been treated earlier, and I had a brother that was treated for ADHD earlier, and I wasn't, but I ended up with, I suppose, complex depression, anxiety throughout my teenage years, which I do see talked about a lot from a lot of the mums. I do hope for my kids who were able to access medication earlier. Do you think there's less chance that they'll end up needy, I suppose, with depression, anxiety in those teenage years? Or do you think it's the same?
It's hard to say because there's just so many changes that happen in those adolescent years that can actually lead to things like depression and anxiety. Certainly, it's quite common to have people with ADHD also experiencing some other mental health conditions as well, like anxiety, depression, all sorts of different things as well. Yeah, so I don't think it's necessarily something that means that you'll be immune to getting anxiety or depression if you get treated for ADHD earlier. It's obviously a protective factor because it's a condition that you've got treated. And so there might be other things like how you're going at school or your concentration or how you're interacting or emotionally regulating in your relationship that might be a little bit different. Yeah, it's a little bit of a different process.
It is a tricky question to answer, but I just see it so often in the Facebook group, I thought I would give it a bit of a run.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if you have a child that is both ADHD and autistic, does that change the conversation around medication at all?
Not really, mainly because it depends on what condition we're trying to treat, for example. So I'm usually pretty specific about talking about realistic expectations for the medications that we use. So for example, if the ADHD is the thing that's causing the most disruption to daily functioning, that's where we'll probably head first in terms of talking about medications. So ADHD medications, the main aim for that would be to improve things like concentration. So for example, with stimulants, that might only be for a certain number of hours a day after you've taken the medication. So if we're specifically targeting that, then that's also what we're trying to look for in terms of improvement. If we're talking about the autism side of things, then it's a different conversation around what types of medications or what other things.
I do see some things online around if people have that dual diagnosis, autism and ADHD, and you medicate ADHD, that sometimes people talk about that personal child becoming more autistic. So I suppose being a bit more emotional, teary, anxious. Do you see anything like that?
That's an interesting question. So I've had a few people that have both ADHD and autism. And sometimes what happens is that when we treat the ADHD, the concentration and the hyperactivity is no longer so much of an issue. So it's more of the other social interaction aspects that become much more prominent. And also the rigidity, the fixation on routines, interests, that sort of a thing. The sensory hypersensitivity that ends up becoming more of an issue and impacting their functioning instead. So in some ways that can happen, that the spotlight almost shifts. But now that we've treated the ADHD side of things, some of the other behaviors that are related to the autism side of things are becoming more prominent and maybe need a bit more work and looking into, whether that's through therapy with a psychologist, with an OT or with a speech pathologist, if that makes sense. Yeah, so I do see that happen. The other side of it all is that often with some of the medications for ADHD, there are associated side effects with it, like some of them can cause agitation in young people. In others, it might actually increase your propensity to become anxious as well. And I've had young people say to me that they've started to have panic attacks after starting on stimulants or other types of medications. That's certainly something else that I need to keep an eye on when I'm checking in with young people coming in to see me after a change of medication. It doesn't happen for everybody, but it's certainly something that I have to keep in the back of my mind, wondering whether it's actually a side effect as a potential cause.
Oh, yeah, that's a really interesting point, actually. That is 100% why I don't have your job. That is so tricky. I don't know how you would even begin to unpack which is what. That's very difficult, I would say. A lot of parents talk about the afternoon crash. So they will talk about that 3 to 6 p.m., how difficult it can be when you're picking a child up from school, let's say. They're hungry, tired, exhausted, and sometimes you have the afternoon crash stimulants. What is actually happening there, and is there anything we can do to, improve it?
So it's quite a common thing after school, once the stimulants wear off, that you might notice that your child might be becoming more irritable. They probably had a really long day at school as well. And with the stimulants coming off, it also means that they've got less of a handbrake on. They're less able to do some of the things like regulate their own emotions at that point in time without the help of their medications that have been helping them through the rest of that day earlier on. I think it's really tricky because at that point in time, I don't know if medications is always the answer. It's often trying to think of other strategies to put in place, like what are the realistic expectations for what you can expect the child to do at that point in their frame of mind after they're off their medication, for example. It's about addressing some of those basic things as well. I know that if I'm tired after a long day of work and I haven't had something to eat and I'm really hungry, or if I've had a really upsetting day because somebody said something to me that's been really upsetting, I'm going to be pretty cranky too. So whether it's some of those basic needs that need to be fulfilled at that point, thinking about whether you need to have snacks in the car, whether you need to have a moment with your child just to help them co-regulate a little bit as well. I mean, obviously that's going to look different for each parent as well, what strategies you end up enforcing and what you use. Obviously for kids with autism as well, it might be helpful to have sensory aids or tools that might be helpful during that process as well. Yeah, so it's hard because obviously for each child, it's a little bit different. Sometimes it could be that they need some activity or exercise for that period of time just to tide out and to emotionally regulate when they are coming off their medication and getting that crash in the afternoon. So whether that's spending a few hours jumping on the trampoline, making sure that you've organized some physical activity as well, rather than expecting that they're going to be able to do things like homework straight away or household chores. Yeah. So I think it comes down to what type of medications your child is on, realistically expect in terms of when that medication is working, and knowing when is the best time to do certain activities as well for your child.
I think you've made some great points there. It's a very, very tricky time in that afternoon, in particular for the mums that are listening. Some of us are also coming off our own ADHD medication at that time. So it can be a very, very tricky afternoon all the time. What would you advise parents who are worried about the long-term impacts on growth, appetite, or sleep? What are some of the things that you talk about a lot in your appointments that maybe other parents would love to know?
Obviously, growth is a huge thing in terms of what people are concerned about on longer terms, medications like stimulants, for example. I often talk about how stimulants can do things like reduce your appetite, and in the short term, it can reduce your weight, for example, and also impact the rate of how fast you're growing. But I think looking at a few of the studies that have come out, generally on the whole, people do tend to catch up over time in terms of their height and how tall they end up growing. It's much more dependent on how tall the parents are, for example, and the genetics around that as to the ultimate height that they might reach. It's just that with the stimulants, obviously with the impact and how hungry your child might be getting, it may also impact growth in those areas. So for me, it's really important that it's quite a regular thing that we're monitoring weight and height to make sure that the young person is tracking in the right percentiles. And, you know, if it gets to the point where they're dropping a lot of weight to the point where I'm very concerned about them physically, it may be that point in time that we actually choose to take them off certain medications like stimulants and give some non-stimulant medications a go for a period of time so that they've got time to catch up in terms of growth. So, yeah, it does have short-term impacts. Longer term, though, I think it has less of an impact, and generally kids do tend to grow, just maybe at a little bit of a slower rate compared to their peers that might not be on stimulants. Yeah, I don't know if that answers your question. Yeah.
No, it definitely does. It definitely does. I talk a lot about the long wait times, and often we see parents and mums in the Facebook group particularly who are sharing how long they're waiting and how difficult that process can be. Is there anything for parents that they can actually do whilst they're waiting that you think is positive? The best thing to do whilst you're waiting, maybe lifestyle changes or supplements or parenting changes or anything you could do for the child to see some improvement while you wait?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I'm glad that you asked that, because obviously once it gets to them coming to see me, a lot of the time we do end up having a bit of a conversation about medications, but actually I think there's a lot of value in some of those preliminary things that you can do before you reach me as well. It would be worth your while to think about checking in with a psychologist for your child first, just to figure out if there's other strategies that can be put in place, either in the home setting or things that you can put in place to help the child sort of add a bit more structure. If they're struggling with things like organization or concentration, that's a good starting point, because at the end of the day, even with medications, we're probably going to need to use some of those strategies anyway. And it's always going to be helpful for the parent to learn more and more about how their child is functioning and what they're struggling with and what strategies are beneficial specifically for your child beforehand as well. Oftentimes, by the time they get to me, they might have tried some of those things and it might not have been able to stick, mainly because for a child with ADHD, it can be very hard to implement some of those strategies. But oftentimes, together with the medications and the strategies, they're much more able to implement some of those things that was taught to them by the therapist. And actually, that combination is particularly effective longer term.
Oh, that's a great point. And I understand you're a psychiatrist and you're not a naturopath, but is there any supplements that you think can be used before medication or with medication that are worth considering? It can be really confusing out there for a mum with some of the sales tactics of the online businesses, and you just don't even know where to start.
Jane, I don't know if I'm the right person to be asking this question. Usually my approach, I do have parents who put their kids on supplements because they think that it might be helpful in terms of the ADHD or how the brain works. My usual approach to it is that I'm often open-minded about it. I will often ask about what those supplements are. Obviously, if they're finding it helpful, I won't necessarily discourage them from using them. It's more of an issue if it starts to impact on their physical health in some way, or if we're noticing some negative effects from it. So my approach to it is, you know, parents will often do their own thing in regards to supplements, but my role in it is to sort of monitor and figure out if there are any negative effects from it. And if there are, usually I'll be pretty upfront about my opinion on that and say, look, I'm really worried about you using this for your child. I'm worried about these potential consequences. Obviously, it's up to you whether or not you stop it or not, but I'd be much more comfortable if we just ended up going with the more conventional therapies. But yeah, it is more of a discussion in that way. I think for me, as a child psychiatrist, it's particularly important getting feedback from parents and also teachers about how the child is going. I know the approach is slightly different as an adult when you see an adult psychiatrist. For me, in particular with the ADHD side of things, it's really important that I'm understanding what the environment is like for the young person. Oftentimes there are conversations to be had with school as well. After a diagnosis, it can be really helpful for school to know about the diagnosis, because they can also put other strategies in place in the classroom or even exam provisions that could be particularly helpful. I've had some young people that have been really self-conscious about talking about their diagnosis with school, and I can understand that there is still stigma around things like mental illness and having a mental health condition. But on the whole, I think schools are coming more on board with the idea of ADHD and what that looks like. There's much more awareness of it. And generally, when parents and young people have had conversations with school about their diagnosis, it's usually been quite helpful. And teachers have been able to put strategies in place for some of the concentration issues, the not being able to sit still as well, together with the medications.
Look, thank you so much for your time, Mimi. As I said, I've been waiting a long, long time for someone to respond to my emails that we're able to share as a psychiatrist. I really appreciate your expertise. If anyone would like to look up Dr. Mimi Shu, she's available at the Lionheart Clinic. I'm happy to put her link into the show notes if anyone would like to check her out. Also, thank you for sharing. I really appreciate your time and thank you so much.
Thanks, Jane. It was great to chat with you today.
Quick announcement. Did you know that we have an ADHD month shop filled with resources designed just for you? These resources are packed with answers to the most frequently asked questions I get sent in via email. Everything from understanding ADHD and autism to practical tips for daily life. There's also a free assessment tool. If you're wondering about ADHD or autism for yourself or your little one, don't forget to check out the free assessment tool under free resources section on my website, adhdmums.com.au.